Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
I am invincible. I love that song by Helen Reddy that was made popular in 1973 and was the theme song of a movie called 9 to 5, which if you're of a certain age, you probably remember when it first came out. And if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. But we are talking today with Pam Ross. She is someone who I have had the pleasure of knowing for about 10 years. Admired her for a long time for her passion for empowering women, creating attention around women's issues, and saying the F word, which is feminism. And today we're talking with Pam about her own personal story, how she came to be so passionate, so involved, and so experienced in working with the women's movement. And then we're also going to be talking about an upcoming conference here in St. Louis at the end of September on the 27th, featuring national leaders from the labor movement and the women's movement. So welcome to the air, Pam. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for making some time. You know, these are important issues that I find are not discussed as often as I would like. You know, I grew up in the women's movement as well, in the early 80s, I was interning in Washington, D.C. at a women's organization, and it just definitely changed my life and opened my eyes to so many things. I think often people either take for granted the rights we have and that others fought for, or, you know, people are just unaware. But let's start with your story. How did you first, experience some issues firsthand that kind of woke you up to wanting to get involved and make a difference?
Well, I have to say the night that I joined NOW, the National Organization for Women, it was over probably a fairly petty issue. I was asked to make coffee at work, and I didn't drink coffee. I didn't make coffee at home for my husband, and I just found it to be really irritating, and that just sort of sent me over the edge. And I joined NOW that night, and that was in 1976. But I have to say that my first husband tried to kill me twice by strangulation, which is an extremely lethal form of abuse, which frequently leads to the death of a woman because her neck is so vulnerable. And I had also experienced child sexual abuse from a cousin who was about 10 years older than me. Fortunately for me, I had good parents, and so I did survive, but it just shows that you can't tell by looking at a woman if she's had any of those experiences. And so many women that are probably listening right now, can relate because it's a very common problem. Domestic violence, which really has taken center stage lately, but it is frequently ignored, especially by prosecutors and police.
Well, that's true. And I know when I grew up in the 60s and my mom put four kids in the car and left in the middle of the night, I mean, no one was talking about it in the 60s. There weren't domestic violence shelters. There certainly weren't hotline numbers and resources. Even now, there's very few resources, but there are at least hotlines and support groups and places women can go to get help should she finally be battered so much and, you know, to the point that she is forced to leave. But so you experienced some things very, very serious things. And I think, you know, it's so empowering to hear a woman share her story because it gives permission to other people to open up. And I think that more and more people are sharing now and are on the other side of it and have gone on to have business and professional success. And then women that are still in it, regardless of their place in life, their status, their economic background, their race, their culture, you know, if they see a woman tell and share her story, you know, that will empower her to eventually leave. Do you think that's true?
Yes, because we finally put a name on it, and it is discussed a lot more frequently. And as awful as we all feel for the wife of the player Rice, we are at least confronting it in a very national way, and it's in a way that has not been done really in the past. You know, it kind of flares up. We talk about it for a minute, and then it goes away. But I think this is a story that is going to continue because so many NFL players have been terribly violent with their wives and family members.
And so now that it's getting some national attention, what do you hope to see as a result of, you know, I mean, thankfully for social media and new technology, we're able to share these stories in a faster, more powerful way, in a visual way. You can't get those images out of your mind once you see them. But
right.
What do you hope and what do you think needs to change?
Well, what I'd really like to see is that police and prosecutors would treat those violent assaults as they would for any person, whether they're related to the perpetrator or not. So giving mostly men, I mean, most domestic violence is done by men. It's not to say it doesn't happen with women, but they need to be treated like any other person who is really committing those kinds of crimes. The assaults can't be okay if it's in a family situation. We don't allow people to beat their children anymore. You know, I mean, there's a hotline for that. Unfortunately, because women are adults, there's no mandated reporting, and yet we walk away when we know, many of us know, that a neighbor or a family member is at high risk because we don't want to get involved. But we're going to be involved at the funeral, and is that really where we want to be involved?
Mm, so true. I mean, I had I have a friend who was a female police officer that said on some domestic violence calls, you know, the men would be standing there having a cigarette with the abuser.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, no one's giving the woman any advice of where to go, what to do. Occasionally my friend would, you know, she would certainly say, call this number or leave. It doesn't get better. It's only going to get worse. And you know, I don't know how much police are really trained. I think they do receive some training, but, you know, who knows? They may be abusers themselves, so they're looking the other way perhaps. But I think the public has a role to play to create some pressure to say, you know, we're not going to support any institution that continues to allow violence by their team members to go on, you know, there's just more has to be done there. So, yeah, we have seen some incredible stuff there coming out of, you know, different football players with domestic violence. And, you know, what bothers me is so much is in the newspaper or they don't label it domestic violence.
No.
They'll say, this thing happened.
A domestic dispute.
You know, a couple fought. You know, they do not label it domestic violence using those words.
No.
And I think that has to happen more often. I mean, I can't even watch the news anymore because I'm yelling at the television, you know, call it what it is, you know. But,
well, and the whole conversation about Homeland Security, what about the women who in their own home are not safe because we refuse to cope and deal with the violence that goes on in a family because it's behind closed doors? I mean, this is really a disgrace. And, I mean, we have so many police officers who beat their wives, and no one will go to that woman's assistance because, they just won't help another cop escape, you know, from domestic violence. I mean, they look the other way. They protect the cop who's abusive, and so they are really stuck.
And this notion that our greatest terrorist is the one living in the house with us. I mean, what do you see is the connection between domestic violence and, you know, living in a patriarchal culture, especially in other countries where, you know, there's even more violence against women in various forms and rape within the context of marriage and forced marriages and arranged marriages. I mean, what's the connection between violence against women and patriarchy?
Well, the whole concept that any culture that values virginity devalues women. So that's something that we in the feminist movement have talked about for years, that virginity is a fleeting, momentary thing. So as soon as a woman is a real adult, she's not really a person anymore. She's now chattel. And, I mean, the whole conversation about child marriage and arranged marriages, it's just selling women into sexual marriage slavery. I mean, they don't have any way out. I mean, it is a patriarchal culture in most of the world. There's a very few places where the culture isn't in favor of war. We love, you know, arms, and everybody's got to have a gun now. I mean, it's insane. It's gone completely crazy with violence. So, you know, women need to be in positions of authority to stop some of this violent and armed behavior.
I saw a film at the end of June at the Zonta International Convention that it was a slap upside my head, and I thought I'd been, you know, had heard of things, seen things, and was aware. This was a film made in Tibet, in Nepal, about women when their husband dies. It's considered part of their culture. It was up until 1977 that this was common practice, that they would burn the body of the man, as they do for their funeral rites, and then the surviving spouse was expected to throw herself on the fire. And if she resisted, they would stone her, they would drag her, they would throw her. So she could be a young woman in her 20s with young children and had been married to an older man, which is often the case,
right.
And have to sever. And when I saw this film, it just blew my mind. It was the first time it had been shown in the United States, and hopefully we'll be able to get it and show it in St. Louis and in other cities around the country. But the women that were so brave to bring this film to our attention, you know, they were, interestingly, women business owners. One was in the tourism industry. One owned a construction company. And so they're like the leading feminist of their generation. What we went through in the 70s and 80s, they're just now going through there. And they were saying that young girls drop out of school because there's not even girls' bathrooms, and they
right.
don't have access to sanitary products. And so girls are dropping
right.
out of school because they don't have some basic sanitary things. So things we take for granted here, We can't even begin to imagine what it's like in some of these other countries. But what we are talking about today is what's going on in the United States and, you know, this connection between the labor movement and the women's movement. Labor has not gotten its due acknowledgement and thanks for leading the way, paving the way before the 70s. The labor's movement was making changes. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know from your background, you worked on many campaigns with United Auto Workers and the International Union of Elevator Constructors and other unions and other political campaigns. What do you think the role has been in the labor movement on behalf of women?
Well, of course, there's always struggles between men and women in the labor movement because, for instance, at the UAW, when Rosie the Riveter was sort of told to go home and make babies, a lot of those women said, no, we're not doing that. I work at the UAW at a plant, and I'm going to stay. And they had to fight for equal wages, which they were paid about half what the men were paid. So, you know, they struggled and they managed to, you know, get equal wages. And then the other thing was when they put women on the floor, the factory floor, the men were sort of aggravated because older men would take the easier jobs, the lighter weight jobs, and that it's kind of true on construction and highway issues as well. So what they did eventually, though, which was helpful, was they lowered the standards for men, and then they found that in order to, you know, allow women on the floor, and then the men realized, you know, hey, that actually helped because we had a lot fewer injuries. Those standards for men were too high for men. So by lowering those work standards, lower weight, they would slightly alter some of the process to make women able to do the work. Then the men found out, hey, you know what? We want those women on the floor with us because now we don't have as many repetitive injuries, and you know they just didn't go home quite as kind of beaten up after a day. I've spent a lot of hours on the floor of auto plants, and I can tell you it's noisy, it's cold, it's very difficult, and it's surprisingly very skilled work. They have only seconds to do certain jobs, so they would sort of slow some processes down in order to, you know, make the movement of the auto plant smoother. So that was one big advantage for women. And in the early days, the labor women didn't really want equality in the same way that women who worked white-collar jobs did because they were afraid that they'd get hurt on the job. So there was a struggle in the early days. But as things evolved, they realized, oh, we can just get the standards altered, and men will be appreciative as well. So that's a big issue. Also, those union women fought for child care provisions. They fought for pregnancy-related issues. A lot of them had to be litigated against the employers and stuff. And, you know, as it turns out, what we're seeing with younger families now is that men are very concerned about being able to spend time with their kids as well. So I think that that has been a major improvement for not just women, but men and children. So that's why women need to be in all places and in positions of authority to make those changes that the patriarchy doesn't see. It's not that men are right or wrong. They only have half the answers.
That's a great way to put it. They only have half the answers. And I love reading the biography of Jane Addams, I think it was called Spirit in Action, about her efforts to get, you know, things like child care and better working conditions and shorter work days. And because for a long time there were no child care options, and there certainly wasn't maternity leave. And, you know, and a lot of those things that, you know, maybe sometimes now women take for granted that are in their 20s. I mean, you've spoken at several college classes, and, you know, you've talked to younger women what are the messages you want them to know about the rights that our mothers and ourselves fought for in the 70s and 80s and earlier?
Well, unfortunately, there are men working every day to undo it. We can see that in reproductive rights over birth control issues and termination of pregnancy issues. And a lot of things get said that are completely crazy. You know, Todd Akin being one of them, talking about, you know, if a woman's raped, she's probably not going to get pregnant because, you know, the body has a way of shutting things down. I mean, that kind of nutty stuff. And then to say that there's never a reason to terminate a pregnancy to save the life of a mother is another one of the things that gets said on a regular basis. And they don't understand preeclampsia, which is a very lethal, high blood pressure issue that many women die from. I think people who watch Downton Abbey will remember that from one of the programs. And a second one is a pregnancy in the fallopian tubes, that it's lethal. So we have to continue to make the world safe for women. And we're not finished with domestic violence. We spend so much money on prisons and so little money on protecting women in their homes. It's really a disgrace in this country because women and children are at great harm. And so the kids who are watching are the next generation. And what do they learn growing up in that environment of violence and bullying? They go to school, they bully kids. I mean, this doesn't end when they walk out the door in the morning. It just perpetrates more violence, and it allows for a lot of failure in school. You know, kids who are bullied are not going to do very well in school because they're terrified frequently. So the whole issue of violence has to be addressed regularly. So those are the issues that I think young women have to think about. Yes, in the old days, the want ads read male and female. If you were a CPA and a woman, you couldn't get a job as a CPA because it wasn't under the women's list. So those are things that probably are never going to go back to the way they were. And there are certain things that I don't think we have to, you know, keep protecting. But there are many subtle ways that men get hired over women. And we just came out with an in-depth study that showed that for every child a woman has, she loses 6% in pay. And every child that a man has, he gains 4% in wage. So, and they looked at all sorts of issues, and they decided that it wasn't about, you know, part-time work or any of those other factors. So, you know, does a woman really want to lose 6% of her pay for every child she has? You know, these things have to be addressed because frequently they are the only people supporting those children.
So, you know, is it surprising to you, or there seems to be such a rollback for reproductive rights, especially in Missouri and then the Midwest, or they're just chipping away at it. So, I mean, what should women be doing as an electorate, as, you know, with voting power, with the ability to vote their conscience? What's your advice to women, you know, coming up on this new, you know, this fall election season?
Well, you know, if we don't vote our conscience and our issues, they're going to be ignored and they're going to be rolled back. So, you know, the most important thing a young woman can do is to register and to vote and to look at what is that person saying that he or she is going to do. Is it just going to be about tax credits for corporate America? Is that who we really want to vote for? And if that's who is on your ballot, you need to find somebody else to vote for, or to find somebody to run, or think about running yourself.
And think about running yourself. That's great, because there are some wonderful training programs here in St. Louis and throughout the country for women thinking about running. And it can be just starting small at the local school board, or, you know, a small office that where your voice can be heard. So you've been involved in political campaigns and probably for mostly men, but some women. Is there a difference in political campaigns on how a woman runs versus how a man runs for office?
Well, yes, because a woman is, on one level, women are seen as less corrupt, which is probably, you know, our sort of our gimme on it. But the problem is that if a woman has children and they're young, there's this whole conversation about why is she doing this? Why is she leaving her children? And so it makes life a little bit more complicated, and, you know, it also leads to a lot of grandmothers running because they can say, well, my children are raised. I mean, it is very complicated. Clothes is another issue. You know, they'll talk a lot about what she wore instead of what she said. They never discuss men's, you know, suits. And, you know, it's a different idea of what leadership should look like and who should be leading. I mean, Patty Murray, was the senator from Washington State, was recently described as some silly woman in tennis shoes. You know, I mean, just
oh my God.
Really, really nutty comments about a woman who's a leader in the U.S. Senate. So if they can do that to her, imagine what a woman running for a board of aldermen or, you know, a school board. You know, the school board is a place where women can start and be very effective because that's where they live, kind of, and their neighbors know them. And then from there, they can run for state rep. From there, they can run for the Senate, the state Senate. And that's, you know, that's a great path, but it takes a lot of time, and it's a really grueling process for a lot of families.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We have to take a station identification. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Pam Ross, and we're going to talk about a major conference coming up here in St. Louis at the end of September that if you're anywhere driving distance or flying distance, you should be here at this conference coming up. And so we're going to talk more about what that is, who's going to be speaking at it, and how you can make a difference and improve the lives of women in politics, in labor, and in society. So stay with us. You're listening to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. We're thrilled that you're listening to the program today, and we'll be right back.
Are you tired of the abuse? Trying to recover after rape or other sexual violence? Are you worried about a friend or a family member? Safe Connections is here for you in the greater St. Louis metropolitan area. We work to reduce the impact and incidence of domestic violence and sexual assault. Access referrals, resources, and most of all, compassionate support through our 24-hour crisis helpline. No cost. Call us anytime at 314-531-2003. That's 314-531-2003. Have you heard of Modere yet? Modere is a new online retail brand for today's modern shopper. Modere offers ultra-premium products such as hair care, skin care, and household essentials at crazy affordable prices. Most importantly, Modere's products are safe and non-toxic. In fact, Modere makes some of the safest and most effective clean label products on the market today. Modere has created a fun way for people to try 5 of their premium non-toxic hair and skin products free of cost with no obligation to buy. It's called the Modere Beauty Box. Check this out. Modere will send you a beauty box of premium hair and skin products. You try them, and if you love them as much as we think you will, purchase them. Otherwise, Modere will pay for you to send them back, and you still get to keep the free gift included in the beauty box. Super fun and easy. To demo the Modere Beauty Box at no cost or obligation, just go to beautyboxfreetrial.com. That's beautyboxfreetrial.com to get your Modere Beauty Box today. Again, that's beautyboxfreetrial.com. Modere, we are stylish, safe, smart.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. My guest today is Pam Ross, a woman who has really walked the talk and worked in the women's movement and labor movement for many years and has helped run campaigns and has just been at the center of a lot of important topics and helped promote and develop legislation to improve the quality of life for women. And coming up, she's very active in an organization called Veteran Feminists of America, and we want to know more about that organization and an event that they are bringing to St. Louis on September 27th at the Renaissance Grand Hotel called Labor and the Women's Movement, The Untold Story and Why It Matters. So, Pam, welcome back to the program. Tell us about Veteran Feminists of America and what that organization is involved with.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it has nothing to do with the military, and a lot of people have been confused about our name. But we are really the women who have been active since the 60s. So I happen to be the youngest member, and I'm 63. So that should kind of tell you that a lot of women are in the 70s and 80s. And we have some of the original founders of NOW who are members, and they're incredibly interesting women in their later years, who, when you look at them, you don't see their age, you see their vibrancy and their ability to still appreciate and understand what's going on every single day in America. So these are women who we'd all like to be older like they're older, which is involved, vibrant, and just really staying in the stream of life. So we've been an organization for 21 years. This is our 22nd year. So it's a very dynamic group of women, and their mission is to record the history that usually gets ignored. It's not in many of the books, even though we did make history. We just didn't make the history books. So that's part of our function. The other function is to honor the women who've actually done the work, both nationally and locally. So at our upcoming conference, we have several women that we'll be honoring who have amazing lives. And we want to make sure that somebody says, thank you for helping my daughter, my granddaughter, and myself have a fuller, richer life in America.
So in terms of the women that have led the way and this honoring, how can people submit a name of someone they want to honor as someone who was a trailblazer in a certain field?
Well, we have a website, and I can give you that site address, which is just VFA, Veteran Feminists of America, so VFA-Midwest.org. And they can submit those names and let us know about it. We're happy to, honor more women. This isn't about limiting to two or three women. I mean, I think most of us have been in community functions where, you know, the woman whose husband had a lot of money and she donated a lot of money to charity, they get to honor her. This isn't about that at all. This is about honoring the women who actually did the work for usually no pay and a lot of upheaval in their life to do the work. So people who start organizations that benefit women, women who've, you know, really set up the Equal Rights Amendment legislation and lobbying, and women who fought for reproductive rights and workers' rights. So it's a variety of women that we'll be honoring on the 27th of this month.
Fantastic. And so the untold story and why it matters between the labor movement and the women's movement, you know, including the history and what happened to Rosie the Riveter, I mean, what are some of the messages and some of the things that will be highlighted at the all-day conference?
Well, at this point, I think that the labor movement is going to be more focused on women because so many women live at the bottom of the wage scale. And that really has to change. We have people who are working at fast food restaurants for 10 years, making $8.50 an hour after 10 years with no benefits, you know, just a paycheck that's really a poverty check and having them say, well, we can't afford to pay them anymore. But, you know, that just doesn't ring true. That's never really an acceptable answer, in my opinion. So what we are learning is how the original women who worked in the movement, the progress that they made and all the things that they accomplished for women, whether it be about pregnancy and family leave and better wages for women in similar or the same jobs. And now we need to focus on making sure that we work for the women who are at the bottom of the wage scale, because those kids are at high risk for a life in a horrible situation. Many of them end up in prison. I mean, it just has to change. You know, they spend hours getting to work because they don't have a car. They spend hours trying to find childcare. All of these things make life really miserable. So that's one of the things that we'll be talking to them about the Hobby Lobby case to some extent. We'll be talking about just the things that women face every single day on their job and how the unions have represented those women and how they've fought for things. I mean, you're fighting against corporate America, so it's never an easy battle, and it's, you know, two steps forward and one back, and we're seeing the one back right now on a lot of levels. Those wages at the bottom have not changed. They've gotten much worse because of inflation and because of health care costs. I mean, most of these people, if they can finally get on Medicaid after being on hold forever, trying to get those benefits, there's just a lot of things that we have to continue to talk about and make the general public understand it's in their best interest not to have so many people on social welfare programs instead of having the employers pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a young single mother who's 21 and has been working for 2 years. She's got a two-year-old, and she would take the buses, you know, many miles in the middle of the winter to go work at a minimum wage job at a fast food restaurant. And, you know, I saw it firsthand, and she has been struggling and, you know, has not been able to, you know, work even full time and pay rent, and, you know, and it's just a vicious cycle, and something has to break the cycle. And, you know, she's been thinking about going into the military, and then what do you do with your two-year-old? It's just, you know, and so I've seen it, and I feel so frustrated because I want to help her. And, you know, these issues are just not discussed. So this conference, you envision, will be some of the trailblazers. Tell us about some of the trailblazers and some of the amazing women that will be speaking on September 27th here in St. Louis.
Well, I'd like to talk about Muriel Fox because she's the co-founder of NOW, and she also started the NOW Legal Defense Fund, which had many groundbreaking lawsuits that we won. And the reason Muriel was so successful was because she ran the largest ad agency in New York, which at that time would have been in the world. So she is a wildly successful woman who understood that just because she made it doesn't mean that every woman is going to do as well as she did. So she had an incredible brain and conscience. And so she'll be speaking early on about the history of those early labor women and her relationship with them, which is a fascinating subject because among men, I don't think many ad executives were in touch with labor organizers. You know, I mean, it's just a totally different kind of relationship between those kinds of men and women. And then we'll have Katie Jordan from the SEIU, that's the service employees who've been organizing the low-wage workers. And she is president of Coalition of Labor Union Women in Chicago. They have incredible stories. As a NOW president in the early 80s, there were two groups that I found always most responsive and responsible, and one of them was CLU, and the other one was the Librarians of the World. they were fabulous. So those are stories that are amazing. Then we'll be talking with Carol King. We'll be talking about that the UAW gave now its very first national office. Walter Ruther was a big feminist, and that is not known. So, you know, a lot of people look at male labor leaders and think, you know, oh, they're all the same. Well, no, they're not all the same. And Walter Ruther was a huge, huge supporter and really understood the plight of women. So we'll have Carol King from Michigan talking about that. And then we just have a lot of very interesting. Bridget O'Farrell wrote a book called Rocking the Boat, Union Women's Voices. That's from 1915 to 1975. So this is a way to really learn history from the people who made it. And I think it's very uncommon for us to be in a small room of under 200 people to really have discussions and really be involved. I mean, I remember going to NOW conferences in the 70s and 80s, and there'd be 3,000 people there. Well, you don't get much interaction with the celebrities that are coming through the door. You just go, oh, wow, look at, wow, there's Gloria Steinem. Well, and, you know, now we are much closer to all the people who'll be speaking. You'll just have a great opportunity to talk to them at lunch, talk to them during their presentation to ask them questions, which is an incredible education that you're not going to get in college.
And I just want to give out some of these websites where people can get more information about some of these amazing speakers. I mean, I'm blown away. I think I remember Muriel Fox from when I did my internship in Washington, D.C. in 82, I guess I was there. Mm-hmm. But some of these other women, if you're not familiar with some of these names, I want to give some websites out where you can read their bios. One of the organizations that's been very pivotal is the 9-to-5 organization, and they have an amazing website with great information and offices around the country. So if you're not in the Midwest and you want to get involved in your local community, do go to the 9-to-5 website and read up about some of their work and ways that you can be involved. They have actually, you know, they're looking for some organizers in Atlanta and Colorado and various things. And that's just 9to5.org. And I was just tickled to read Karen Nussbaum's history and how, you know, her history and that organization's history were very involved with the movie that Jane Fonda was in and was a huge hit. And
Dolly Parton.
She traveled around. And Dolly Parton, and I mean, I just love that movie. It's so funny, and yet it's so sad because it was so reflective of what was going on, and it did wake up the nation to what was going on. And I like what she said, and her website is now. What are we going to do about it? So 9to5.org is a organization to get more familiar with. They're winning justice for working women, and then Sheila Tobias has her own website. She's an author of many books, and she's a speaker. I think she lives in Arizona, but her website is just her name, Sheila Tobias, TOBIAS.com. And you might want to, you know, read some of her books or pass them on as gifts. She writes a lot about breaking the science barrier and about, you know, what happens with girls when they're very good in math and science in elementary school, and then in high school, their grades start slipping because they're, like, worried about impressing boys or just that pressure. Like, they're sort of ostracized if they're too smart in math and science. That still goes on. Anyway, those are some of the websites. And then Katie Jordan, I don't know, what is her website, Pam? Do you happen to know where we can find information about her?
I'm sure on SEIU.org. You would find that. That's her unions. And also I want to mention Karen Nussbaum, who started 9to5, is one of our speakers in the afternoon. And Sheila Tobias is our vice president. She wrote Overcoming Math Anxiety. She's quite a brilliant woman. So I just love having the interaction with women who aren't afraid to be brilliant in public. I mean,
oh,
you know, it's very refreshing. We don't have to lay down
goodness.
And
it's an incredible
like
lineup of people. I did find Katie Jordan's website with her bio. It's whpchicago.org. And she was the first African-American tailor fitter at Litton's department store in Chicago. And she's been a lifelong union activist and president of the Coalition of Labor Union Women in Chicago. So quite an array of speakers that will be, as you said, firsthand in a small, intimate environment of a couple hundred people, not a couple of thousand, where you can go up, meet them, get their books autographed, and ask them questions and be inspired to make a difference in your own life. And the lunch speaker is Alice Kessler-Harris. Tell us a little bit about Alice Kessler-Harris from Columbia University.
She's a very famous professor in women's studies and labor studies, so she sort of perfectly fits our conference. I didn't arrange for the program. I signed up to sell the tickets, and so some of these women I don't have great depth about. I just know that when we sent out the flyer promoting that she would be our lunch speaker, we had an incredible response from students across the six state region. We have many students coming in just to hear her speak. So I know that she has written several books and
Well, I'm looking at her bio at the Columbia University website, and oh my goodness, she has a PhD from Rutgers in 1968 and got her master's also at Rutgers. And, you know, she was the R. Gordon Hoxie Professor of American History and Professor in the Institute for Research on Women and Gender. So some of the most brilliant minds in the country that have been writing about women in work and the history of wages for women in the United States. I mean, these are the leading thinkers of our time, and to see and hear them up close is just going to be amazing. So how can people register for the conference?
Again, they can go to the website, which is vfa-midwest.org, and all of that information is available. And again, Googling some of these women's names will really make you feel proud to be a woman, to say, wow, these are women who, you know, have done the most amazing things, and it's possible for my daughter, my sister, you know, they are just great role models because they embody everything that we hope that women in the future will be, which is making tremendous progress and, you know, being brilliant and being happy to be brilliant and using that brilliance for other women and for, you know, when we help women, we help kids. And so that's the message that I always use to talk about. You know, we're not just fighting for women. We're fighting for the kids, too, because that's where the kids are. They're with the women. So when you raise women's wages, you feed a child better.
Well, it's funny because I'm seeing that up close with Global Mamas. I'm traveling to Ghana, as you know, the end of October. And, you know, they say that one woman there who is now employed getting a fair living wage is supporting 8 to 9 people. On her one salary, she's supporting 8 to 9 people. And that includes sending her girls to school and getting, you know, the education that they need to break out of their cycle. And most of the Global Mamas are, you know, 75% of them have not been to college themselves, but they can provide a better future for their children. And, you know, typical wages there are $2 a day for work, but they're getting maternity leave and health insurance, and they're getting a lot of things because it was started by two women in the Peace Corps who saw these women have these great talents of sewing clothing by hand and making glass beads. And so it's a neat little success story there in Ghana that could be replicated in other parts of the world where we can empower women through their work and through fair living wages. And it's the importance of fair trade, too, to support companies that are doing this and not to buy your products at companies, stores that are using, you know, still slave
wages.
You know, slave wages, children, you know, 14, 15, 16-hour days, and hot working, you know.
Dangerous working conditions, right?
Dangerous working conditions, life-threatening
working conditions. I just think your work with that is so important, because what we also know is that when you educate the woman, she educates her children. And when you educate boys, frequently they leave home for a better job. But women tend to stay and improve their community.
I love that. I think that is such an important thought, that people don't realize that. You know, the men take off, and often they, you know, even they'll take off to go work in the cities. I know in parts of Africa that they're having relationships with other women, and they're coming back, and they're bringing HIV back to their local community. And so many of those women didn't think they could get HIV because they were being monogamous, but their spouses were not. And that's been happening too. And there's been more information getting out about that. So to wrap up, we want to make sure people know to go to the VFA-Midwest.org to register and to get more information about the conference. It's called Labor and the Women's Movement, The Untold Story and Why It Matters. It's September 27th. It's an all-day conference. It will be opening at 9 a.m. and going through not only the end of the day with sessions, but there'll be an awards dinner in the evening. So it's a whole big celebration. And really encourage people to check it out if you can go for just part of it, if you can invite friends from other cities. There are hotel reservations can be made at 800-468-3571. Use the group name Veteran Feminist for your hotel discounted rate there. And, you know, you can come to just part of the day or all of the day. Nominate someone as a woman you want to honor. And just get involved in the dialogue around this, because by talking about it more and creating more intention, we can, you know, pass the lessons on. I mean, I was surprised when I talked to a college student recently, and she did not know what Title IX was. and that is just that is both sad and humorous at the same time. But, you know, the various things that have come along in our lifetime, the Family Medical Leave Act and the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, these are important national policies that we need to not only celebrate, but, you know,
safeguard.
Teach the next generation. Yeah, safeguard them so they're not destroyed, regardless of the political climate, that they are protected for future generations. Any closing thoughts, Pam, as we wrap up?
Well, Brenda, I just am very grateful to be able to talk about this, and, you know, just want to urge younger women to, you know, think carefully about their futures and their daughters' futures and their sons' futures. So thank you again for inviting me, and we're going to have a great event, and everybody there will remember it for a long time to come.
Excellent. Well, we still can make history, and we still can be part of making that history. And taking action, especially with the local political scene, getting involved. And, you know, the things that have come out of tragedy with the Michael Brown situation here in the St. Louis area, you know, dialogue and conversations that have been long overdue are now happening. And you can be part of the solution or you can be part of the problem. It's up to you. Thanks, everyone. Please join us next week, Fridays, 12 noon Central, or listen to the program in your own free time in the evening. It's all of the shows are podcast and archived for download listening. So thanks again, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks. We're going to close up with Helen Reddy, I Am Woman. And, you know, rent that movie 9 to 5 if you haven't seen it in a while and get re-inspired.
Back and prepare, 'cause I've heard break me.